From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, October 30th, 2023.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by Eastern Basements, a division of Maine-owned Eastern Mold Remediation, offering crawl space repairs and waterproofing. EasternBasements.com.
Governor Janet Mills says she expects President Joe Biden will visit Lewiston later this week in the wake of the worst mass shooting in state history. Steve Missler has more.
Mills says that she invited the president to come to Lewiston and that he'll likely arrive on Friday, although the exact details of his visit are not yet known. The governor says President Biden's own experience with loss and grief make him uniquely suited to console a community shaken by a mass shooting that claimed the lives of 18 people and wounded 13 others.
We've seen him appear in such circumstances and offer not only a helping hand, but a very sympathetic ear. And I think he's a very comforting person, and he's able to offer that kind of comfort and support to any families who wish to see him and meet with him.
In the immediate aftermath of last week's mass shooting, Biden called on Republicans in Congress to, quote, fulfill their duty to protect the American people, end quote, and pass legislation banning assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. He also wants Congress to support universal background checks, safe storage of guns, and to end liability immunity for gun manufacturers. Such proposals don't gain much traction in Congress or the Maine legislature, where Democrats control the House, Senate, and governor's office. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Meanwhile, Governor Mills says state and federal agencies continue to expand support for the victims of last week's shooting, their families, and the broader community. Mills says teams with the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention are in Lewiston this week to support first responders, victims, and healthcare providers. And she says the Department of Health and Human Services is launching an online form for organizations to request assistance with behavioral health.
My administration's efforts will evolve as the needs of the community and the needs of our state evolve. Your support throughout all of this will be crucial.
Mills says her administration is also working to identify and support small businesses impacted by closures during the shelter-in-place order. Maine State Police have identified the gun found in suspect Robert Card's vehicle after the mass shootings, along with two others found with his body. Patty White reports.
State Police spokesperson Shannon Moss says the gun found in Card's car was a Ruger SFAR, or small-frame auto-loading rifle. Ruger's website describes it as a lightweight, less expensive sporting rifle. Moss says forensic and ballistic testing still needs to be conducted to confirm whether the gun was used in the shootings at a bar and bowling alley last Wednesday. State police have also identified the guns found with Card's body Friday night in a trailer at Maine Recycling Corporation in Lisbon, a Smith & Wesson M&P 40 caliber handgun, and a Smith & Wesson M&P 15 semi-automatic rifle. Police say Card died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. During a press conference Saturday, an official with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms said a number of firearms had been recovered in the investigation and appeared to be purchased lawfully by Card, some recently and others years ago. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Last week's mass shooting is renewing scrutiny of a three-year-old state law that aims to keep guns away from potentially dangerous people. But it's unclear whether police considered using Maine's so-called yellow flag law against the suspected gunman. And as Kevin Miller reports, critics say Maine's law could be much stronger.
Details continue to emerge about suspect Robert Card's deteriorating mental health before he killed 18 people and injured 13. Card reportedly spent 2 weeks in a New York hospital last July after National Guard officials told police he was, quote, behaving erratically while training at West Point. Saco police were alerted to threats that Card had allegedly made against his U.S. Army Reserves unit. And Card's sister-in-law told NBC News last week that family had reached out to police and the Army in recent months about his mental health. With all of those warning signs, some people are asking why Maine's new yellow flag law wasn't used to confiscate Card's guns before he committed the worst mass shooting in state history.
Based upon what I know, I mean, he had foreseeable, discernible psychiatric issues a few months ago. At that point, I think this law absolutely was designed for this kind of a situation.
Mike Carpenter is a former Maine Attorney General who was serving in the state Senate 4 years ago when the Yellow Flag Law was negotiated. The law allows police to ask a judge to force someone to temporarily give up their guns and blocks them from buying additional firearms if they're deemed to pose a threat to themselves or others. As part of a deal negotiated with gun owners' rights advocates, the law also requires a medical professional to determine that the person poses a risk after they've been taken into protective custody by police.
And I don't know that happened. My guess is it didn't happen. And that's the tragedy of this. The law is only going to work if the people do what they're supposed to do.
Maine Senator Susan Collins expressed similar concerns last week.
If, in fact, the suspect was hospitalized for 2 weeks for mental illness, that should have triggered the yellow flag law, and he should have been separated from his weapons.
Maine's Public Safety Commissioner, Michael Sawchuk, said on Saturday that investigators are still collecting records on Card's mental health, including any documentation about the incidents in New York and his two-week stay at a hospital there. New York's more sweeping red flag law has been employed thousands of times, but it was unclear whether the National Guard or New York State Police reported anything about Card to law enforcement officials in Maine. Card obtained his guns lawfully, some just days before the shooting, according to federal officials. And Sawchuk pointed out that, under federal law, voluntarily checking oneself into a hospital for mental evaluation would not trigger a report to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, also known as NICS.
So in this scenario, we have not seen to this point, I have not seen to this point, that Mr. Card was forcibly committed for treatment. And if that didn't happen, then the NICS check, you could go into a firearms dealer who does all of their work, and the background check is not going to ping that this individual is prohibited.
Sagatahoc County Sheriff Joel Murray told the Associated Press on Saturday that he sent out a statewide alert on Card last month after he made veiled threats against the Saco Army Unit. He says deputies also tried to locate Card at least once, but didn't find him. Saco Police Chief Jack Clements told Maine Public on Friday that his department stepped up patrols near the Army facility in response to that alert. But Card never showed up, so Clements says they had no way to employ the red flag procedure.
So if an agency comes in contact with a person that meets the criteria, that agency is the one that initiates it. We never came in contact with him, so we would have no ability to initiate something when we had no contact with him.
Roughly 20 states, including 4 in New England, have more sweeping red flag laws that allow family members to petition courts to order someone to give up their guns. In Maine, only police can request a gun seizure from the courts. Red flag laws also typically do not require medical evaluations. Those two differences were key to Maine's yellow flag law winning the support of gun owners' rights groups and passing the legislature. But Margaret Groban, a former federal prosecutor who teaches firearms law at the University of Maine School of Law, said on Friday's Maine Calling program that those two additional steps could become obstacles.
It requires initially that someone contact law enforcement. And I think a lot of families with someone in a mental health crisis may not want to contact law enforcement. So, and it also requires 3 separate assessments. In a red flag state, a family can go directly to the court and seek a weapons restriction, while this requires the police to be involved.
Police have used Maine's yellow flag law more than 80 times since July 2020, most often to deal with suicidal individuals. But Sawchuk indicated that he and others will review the law and how it's used based on the events of the past week.
And it's certainly something that we're always looking at. Can we tweak it? Can we make things better? But it has been utilized, and to this point it is being effective.
Meanwhile, some state lawmakers are already advocating for revisiting various gun control measures that failed in the Democratic-controlled legislature last year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
School superintendents in Lewiston and Lisbon have been working with staff and teachers all weekend to prepare for students to return to school this week. Carol Bousquet has more.
Lewiston students will return to school on Tuesday. The transition plan from Superintendent Jake Langless puts students and staff on a light academic schedule this week to give them routine and a chance to gather, grieve, and heal.
Please know that we have absolutely consulted others. We've gathered a lot of research. There's a lot of information out there, trying to ensure we do the very best we can to learn from other situations. And we built the transition plan back to school to ensure we care for those that will care for our most vulnerable. I think at this point in time, that is probably the most important thing.
A town over in Lisbon, Superintendent Richard Green says students on Monday will have a delayed start to give them a sense of normalcy and allow staff to assess their needs. A parent in the district was among those killed in the mass shooting. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
For more on how these kinds of mass shootings affect children and how parents and teachers should talk to kids about them, I spoke with Dr. David Schoenfeld. He's the director of the National Center for School Crisis and Bereavement at Children's Hospital Los Angeles. Schoenfeld says children who've been through a mass shooting often experience both bereavement and concerns for their own safety.
What we see generally after any crisis event, and that would even include natural disasters that occur during weekends, is that children are often afraid to separate from those they love to go back to school because they worry that something will happen if their parents and caregivers are not there to protect them. But they also worry that something may happen to their parents, caregivers, or siblings, or other relatives if they're not there somehow to protect them as well. So school avoidance is very common after really any type of crisis event. And the real management of school avoidance is return to a school setting with supports and accommodations, but you do want kids to return back to school.
If a kid is feeling this way, how can a community or a parent or anyone in the community really help there?
Well, I always tell people there are kind of three things you need to do whenever there's situations like this. You have to keep children safe, but they also have to know they're safe, and they also have to feel they're safe. So you have to do all three of them. So I think the first thing is we do have to take steps to try and make sure that children are safer. And that varies based on what people feel is the most appropriate strategy to use. But I think that's a critical step to take because these type of tragedies should not be occurring. The second thing is we have to tell children that they are safe. And if we want them to feel safe, we also have to feel they're safe as well. So part of what you have to say to children is, you know, we're taking all the steps we can to keep you and others safe in our country. Tell them a little bit about what they're doing in the country, what they're doing in the state, what they're doing in their school and in their home. And then you also have to say, I feel you are safe in school, and that's why I do want you to go to school. If I didn't feel that way, I certainly let you know. But I think the issue is if parents are hesitant to separate from their children because they're feeling scared, the kids will pick that up. And they often do then want to stay home to take care of their parents as well.
Yeah, Lewiston schools, they're still off today as administrators and teachers are discussing how to talk about this shooting with the thousands of kids who will be returning tomorrow. What would your advice be to teachers who will be welcoming them back into their classrooms?
Well, the first thing is to welcome children back into your classrooms. You also have to acknowledge what happened. We've worked with many schools that have had mass shootings or natural disasters. I worked with Newtown Public Schools after the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School, and we actually prepared a script for the first period, for the first day back to school, Monday morning for schools across Connecticut. So a lot of it is starting the conversation, letting kids know that in this particular situation, you can at least tell them that they do not need to be worried that this particular shooter will harm them, so that that danger does not exist at this point. So I think that's appropriate reassurance. But you can also tell them what you're doing to keep them safe and what they should do if they feel unsafe. So I think you need to welcome them back and start the conversation and give them the supports that they need so that they can resume their life.
Does that work need to be an ongoing process as well? I would imagine that this will continue for weeks and months and possibly years down the line.
How long a particular student or staff member may react to this particular crisis event depends in large part on their degree of personal exposure. So if they were at the site of one of the shootings, then of course the reactions are going to be much longer term. If they lost someone through this event, then obviously the grief they have will be long term. And if they're connected with people who were directly impacted, then it will also last longer. But some children already had other crises in their lives to deal with. They may have lost a parent, a caregiver, a sibling through unrelated causes. and this may kind of accentuate their concern and fears. They may have a family relative who's seriously ill, and they may start worrying more about whether they will die too, even if it has nothing to do with this particular event. I did some work in Las Vegas after the shooting at Mandalay Bay, and I had already done some training to this, to some of the schools in that area prior to the shooting, so they were attuned to this. So by the shooting happened over the weekend, but by Monday, they already had students who were, you know, crying in the middle of math class and running and sobbing in the bathroom because a relative had died 6 months ago, where they were having a student in the office crying because she was afraid that her mother was going to die of cancer. Now, the diagnosis of cancer hadn't happened within a week. It's just that you see interviews of people crying and upset and grieving, and you start to think about that could be me. So you will see that other things will come to the surface and other types of distress will be evident. And again, it's not just the children, it's going to be the adults as well.
And that was David Schoenfeld, the director of the National Center for School Crisis and Bereavement at Children's Hospital Los Angeles. You could read links to some of his organization's resources at our website, mainepublic.org. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock on Tuesday morning, we'll hear stories from the Lewiston area and across the state, offering tributes in the wake of last week's tragedy. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thanks for listening.